Hi, I'm Linda Bazanson. I am a grateful member of the L&N Family Group.
Hi, Linda.
And I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bob. I have the privilege of going first today. What? I know you probably read a lot into that what, but I thought, damn, I haven't said anything. Oh, my. We're in for a ride, I think. Can you all hear me fine? Good. I'm done. Thank you. It was really nice meeting you. You know, no kidding aside, when I was looking at this and looking at what we were asked to do, which is talk about the family afterward, which to me is relationships, I thought, wow, you know, I didn't have much to say. Basically, they're very important. Pay attention. And then I thought I'd be done. Obviously, that's a joke. But it's so deep, and it's so rich, and it's so hard to talk about. It's an area where we find ourselves. I think it's an area where we find who we are, what our relationship with God is. I think it's how we learn our lessons. And it is very, very important. And it's hard because, I don't know about you, and I bet I'm pretty right, we like to have our own way. And when you're in a relationship, there's another person. So anyway, I have this thing that I want to start. It's the traditions adapted to relationships. And we thought we would just sort of lay that out there, and then I would talk a little, Bob, and we'll see where it goes. Okay, number one, our common welfare should come first. A healthy relationship depends upon unity. Two, for our family purpose, there is but one authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our family conscience. Each partner is God's trusted servant. Neither governs. Three, the basic requirement for a good marriage or relationship is a mutual desire to make it work. Four, each partner should be autonomous except in matters affecting the other partner, the family, society as a whole. Each marriage or relationship has but one primary purpose, to serve as an expression of God's love. Six, a partner ought never be overly supportive spiritually, emotionally, or physically to the marriage or relationship, lest problems of ego gratification divert him or her from the primary purpose. Seven, each partner ought to strive to be fully self-supporting spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically. Eight, our marriage or relationship should remain forever a free, giving relationship one to the other. Nine, a family or relationship should be pliable in its organization, but our group conscience may appoint special people responsible to serve various functions. 10, a relationship should avoid heated controversy. Each partner best conveys his or her beliefs in philosophy by attraction rather than promotion. Anonymity is a valuable asset to the marriage or relationship. And then finally, 12, selflessness is a spiritual foundation of our way of life as marriage partners, friends, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities, and the basic principle is unselfishness. There's a lot in there, isn't there? And I think if we all did that, we would really be in great shape. Why is it so hard to talk about a perfect relationship? I think for two reasons. One is there aren't any, so you can't hold one as an example. And number two, if you took two people or three people, whatever the relationship is, you take two people and you ask.
I like three.
You ask, But that could be friendship, Bob. If you asked each person in the relationship or the partnership what would be perfect to you, the woman might say something like, well, I want someone who listens. I want someone who's constant. I want someone who's loyal. The husband or the other person might say something as different as, well, I'd like it that my wife is gone on Sunday afternoon so I can watch a football game. I mean, they can be really deep. They can be, but they're still important. And so how can you describe a perfect relationship? And I guess the only way I can do it is just to tell a little bit about what I brought to ours. And Bob and I are married 45 years, so we've been doing it a long time. Sometimes not so well, but we've still been doing it. And I think both of us were committed to the fact that we were going to make it work. And the fact that Bob was sober. If those two things hadn't, if Bob hadn't been sober, there wouldn't have been a relationship. And there were many times, well, anyway, let me tell you a little bit about me. So I met Bob when I was in college. We were blind dates. We were fixed up. And I really liked him. We started to date. As time went on, we later became engaged. And in our engagement, my husband said to me, well, we were out on a date one day, and I was in the car with him, and he said, you know those meetings you've been driving me to on Wednesday night, those aren't meetings of, but those aren't business meetings, they're meetings of AA. And I remember saying to him, my goodness, that's wonderful. That is not a normal reaction of a 21-year-old who's supposed to be getting married. I knew down inside of my soul that he had a problem. I didn't understand the depth of it. I didn't understand the problem. But to have a reaction that, oh, my goodness, that's wonderful, I knew. I knew in my body that there was that we had a problem. In fact, most of our arguments were around either his over-drinking or his driving too fast. Those were the main things that we fought about. Now, I'm living in a dorm, so this is the ancient age, you know. And so he did most of his drinking after he dropped me off. In fact, if anyone had too much to drink and got sick, it was me. He always, well, not always, but for the most part, 95% of the time, really looked like he had it made. He looked like he had a facility. He had a glibness. He could think on his feet. He didn't appear to be shy. He had everything that I thought was just charming. And when he told me about the alcoholism, I thought to myself, we can handle that. Now, I'm a psychiatric nurse working on an alcoholic treatment floor. So if you're expecting a lot of insight, you may want to leave. But I knew we could handle it. I didn't understand the disease. I didn't understand the power of a disease. So anyway, we were married, and then marriage brings its own issues. We entered a marriage, and I had expectations that I didn't even know I had. I didn't even know what they were, but they came from my parents. And my parents were this simple couple who had an only child, who dad came home every day at 5 o'clock. He opened the mail. Mother and dad would visit. They would have a cocktail or two. Now, I knew we would leave that part out, but the rest I was sure would be in play. And then mother always had something wonderful for dinner. We would have dinner, and dad would help my mother with the dishes, cleaning up the kitchen, and I would go upstairs and do my homework, have breakfast the next morning, start all over at 5 o'clock. Now, that was the tape that I shoved in to play when we got married. And I was disappointed from the moment after the honeymoon because, you know, Bob doesn't come home at 5 o'clock. Bob to this day believes that the mail is radioactive and you almost shouldn't touch it. I didn't know how to cook. I didn't know how to do much of anything. I mean, I was this little kid who thought she knew what marriage was about. And he's going to meetings all the time. That's all he wants to do is go to AA meetings. And I started Al-Anon prior to our marriage, and I was going to two Al-Anon meetings a week, but I was only going to look good. Because, you know, I look good. What does the good wife do who's married to an alcoholic? They go to meetings. I thought maybe I'd get some tips on how to make him behave. Didn't get those quite the way I thought they would be presented to me. They were on the wall all the time. I just didn't understand that those were the tips. And so we're off and running. And neither one of us know what we're doing. And we're trying our very best. We love each other. And we really are. We're trying our very best. But I don't know if there's a manual, but if there is, we didn't read it. And if there is, I don't think it's going to be very pertinent anyway, because you have to work it out yourself. But you have to be committed, and you have to love each other, but love is not enough. You know, you have to compromise, and you have to think of the other person. You have to get yourself out of the way a lot of the times. Being selfless is really what's called for. And being selfless is not something that most of us like. You know, my favorite thing is to get my way and you like to give it to me. You know, I'm really happy, you're happy, we're all, you know, doing our own thing. So I think anybody in a relationship comes very ill-equipped. But that's why those traditions, I think, are so important, because they keep talking about God. A higher power. If there's a higher power in any relationship, and you cede to that higher power, you give up to that higher power, and you look at the other person's well-being as much as you can in front of yours, but at least alongside of yours, you know, you've got a recipe that may work. And I don't think every relationship's made in heaven. I don't think every relationship can work. I think we were darn lucky because we had sobriety and we were young. We didn't really know any better. We loved each other and we tried. I remember until we were married 4 years, and by the time we were married 4 years, we had two children, two little boys. And during that time, I was getting crazier and crazier because I was going to Al-Anon, but I wasn't working I was working only the steps I liked. And I didn't like a lot of them. So, well, just figure it out. I was untreated. And so I was getting iller and iller in the relationship. And Bob was sober but never really home very much. And I was working, and we had these two kids, and he was providing for us. But, you know, it just didn't seem like it was enough. And I remember I would use the word divorce a lot. And it was a threatening kind of thing. If you don't shape up, I'm going to divorce you. If this doesn't get better, we're going to get a divorce. And I remember, and this was such an important time in our lives, I don't even know if Bob thinks it was, but for me it was. Remember where we were living, remember pretty much the moment. And he said to me, I want to ask you a favor. I don't want us to ever use the word divorce again. And, you know, why? I mean, I was angry at the time because I had just said that. And he said, because if we use the word, we could speak it into being. If we speak the word, it's a possibility. If we use the word, it could happen. How about if we don't use the word? And I think that was one of the kindest, most incredible things that he gave to our marriage. Because I didn't have that wisdom. And from then on, I did not say it, nor did he. And thank God we've been able to make this work. But it's about compromise. It's about having God in it. It's about having friends who support you. These steps are a way of life for relationships. They teach us who we are. And as we grow up and as we learn more, we get better at it. And yet, we had an argument just the other day at the airport. I mean, you're not immune because we still show up in the relationship. But we get over it sooner. It doesn't dominate us. You know, how important is it? It's so important for me to keep saying. Any day, I was just saying to Mildred, any day that we're healthy and have our wits about us is a good day. And I'm so grateful that I know that now. And I'm so grateful that I can respond to life on life's terms. And I don't believe I am very selfish in our relationship. Now I know how to do it, and I can fall back into the habit, because who's perfect? But for the most part, I try to think of what's the best for both of us when I'm not angry. And when I get over the anger, I can go back to that. Can you take over now, hon?
Thank you. Bob, alcoholic. For many years, I traveled alone. Linda stayed home and kind of took care of her family. And now I travel with Linda, and people like Linda better than me, which I find irritating. If without question, inside our family, if you were to look, Linda's a lover. Yeah, but I'm different. I'm more selfish and more self-centered.
He's always different.
Yeah, but Linda's more giver. Period. She is a juice. It's a lubricant. It's a wonderful sort of thing. My first thought is about myself, and she's been a very easy person to love and a very easy person to be with. But when you think about two people, brand new sober, had my last drink on their honeymoon, okay, when I dove off the cliffs in Mexico, you know, which I could have died in our honeymoon, which is would have been dumb.
Really dumb.
Yeah. So, I mean, today they say don't date. We are now married. I'm one day sober. We're not sober on our honeymoon. We had 3 months of sobriety when we got married, and then I drank on our wedding night and drank during our honeymoon. So I entered that, you know, I'm 23 years old, I'm sophisticated but pathologically immature, and I have been, was born on third base, you know, I'm from an intact family, one of seven kids, lovely mother and father, education paid for. I mean, if you can't make it home from where I started from, you ought to, you know, give up the trip. You know, but I managed to work my way back to home plate the wrong direction. And did not have a clue. Mother always said, you're not very bright, Bob, dress well. And I had always tried to, you know, kind of compensate for that. I looked good. I looked sophisticated. But I really didn't know what the hell was going on. So I stumbled. I had a drinking problem from a young age, started drinking when I was 13. I think I was alcoholic by the time I was 18, walked out of Notre Dame, middle of my senior year, diagnosed an alcoholic, got out of the Army, did not get commissioned. When I was allowed to drink, I drank, you know, a fifth to a quart a day, and I had an enlarged liver at 23 years old when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. Not a dramatic story, but I think I had the disease, and I think I got there fairly early, and I was unable to adjust myself. But we had a lot of things going for us, thank God. We were similar backgrounds, both Catholic, both educated, both from intact families. The thing that in my family, if you didn't treat the women well, you were in deep crap. Okay, I mean, if you wanted a death sentence around our house, let your father walk in the house catching you badmouth your mother, you know, or your sisters. I mean, that was not an okay thing. So I had a sense of taking care of Linda. We've had different phases in our relationship. So when I came in, for the second time in our life, I had major financial trouble about 3 or 4 years ago. And Linda decided that she would say yes to talking more. She didn't like to talk. She didn't talk much. And so I got to listen to her, and I got a sense of what she gave up as a 21-year-old woman. You know, mostly she gave up her friends. I mean, you know, so I'm going to a meeting every night. I mean, we're alone. We saw each other more when we were dating than when we were married. You know, I'm going to a meeting every night. She's a nurse. She's getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go to work. We're like ships passing in the night. And over the first 7 years, you really tried to change me. She had an agenda. Of the two of us, I was the least well. I was the most, and I looked okay, but I was self-centered. I was on my own mission. I'm going to meetings every day. I'm not an attentive father. She is working and taking and doing most of the child care. I'm kind of the last of that crew that didn't do a hell of a lot around the house when we were not proud of that, but that would be an accurate description. So she's, you know, really got her hands full, and I'm out trying to save my ass and save the world. And over a period of time, that got old for both of us, and it got pretty tough, and all of it, you know. And we found ourselves at 6 or 7 years, and we both kind of had a breakdown. And it was a breakdown that I think is not uncommon in recovery. I don't think you get it all done the first 2 years. I think we make enormous progress during the first 1, 2, 3 years. We come in here with a list of things to do, and mostly we clean up the consequences of our addiction. But we don't usually get deeply into the causes and conditions of our illness until you've been around a while and you realize that, hey, I thought this was, you know, an answer. I've still got many of the problems that I walked in the front door with. What the hell's going on? I'm going to meetings. I have a sponsor. I'm doing the steps. I'm sponsoring people. I'm doing the deal, and I'm still pretty unmanageable. A lot of us have defects of character that kind of went underground and popped up. Drinking symptom went away, but we're, you know, you have sex, gambling, overeating, overworking, anger, money spending. There's just a wonderful list of things that, you know, if you take your compulsive patterns and put the energy into them, you can have almost the same internal mental experience sober that you had drunk. And at 7 years, we collapsed almost at the same time. And it was about the time we got Bob and Marcy came into our lives.
My dad was dying.
Linda's dad was dying. We had reservations to go to Denver for the international, and we had to put them on hold, and I had to take care of the kids. And Linda, did you take the kids with you? I don't remember. She went to Chicago to take care of her dad. And we just collapsed. And it was a second surrender. It was a collapse of a recovery that dealt with the symptom of drinking and dealt with the consequences of my first year of sobriety, and it was the burden of really of the ongoing defects of character that I had not attended to. And, you know, we talk so much about the wonder of the recovery of alcoholism. I want you to know that there is a wonder of the collapse. The collapse may be the largest gift we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. The collapse, the ego killer, the flattener that allows us to be open enough and teachable enough in a moment. So I ended up in a program that incidentally allowed me to, it surrendered me. You know, we talk about surrendering. I didn't surrender. I was surrendered. Okay. And it's like falling through a trapdoor. It is not like, oh, I'll surrender. I mean, it is like falling through a trapdoor and you wake up in an alternate universe. And, you know, all of a sudden everything's different. And we'll talk a little bit more about that when we talk about, you know, step 6 and 7. And then, not very well, I got a sponsor at my first meeting. I had a sponsor for 43 years who died 3 years ago. I know Dick Martin. I was presented a program that started me out helping me maintain sobriety, which I've never been able to do. In order to do that, I had my surrender, turned my will and my life over to the care of God. And then I said, look, kid, if you don't clean house and help others, you're not going to make it. So you're going to do a 4-step, you're going to do a 5th step, you're going to get ready to get rid of these defects of character, you're going to do your best job of getting rid of your defects of character, and then you're going to make amends. That process, if you're serious about it, is going to change your life. It's going to change who you are. Well, that happens to be a process that's wonderful in maintaining relationships. All there is in life is relationships. There's nothing else. I mean, there's relationship with your program, with your God, with your city, with your spouse, with your children, with your parents. There is nothing other than relationships. Relationships are mirrors in which you experience yourself. Most of us do not want to look at that mirror. or most of us have, you know, kind of an unrealistic way of seeing what's going on. We really do not see ourselves, you know. DeMello defined spirituality as waking up. He defines spirituality as seeing yourself as others see you. Can I tell my joke you don't like?
Sure.
Okay, lady goes to the doctor and says, I got this problem. Doctor says, what's wrong? She said, I'm passing gas. You can't smell it and you can't hear it, but I have this sensation. Could you give me something for it? He said, sure. So he gives her this mic. Come back in a week. She comes back in a week. Doctor says, how's the problem? She says, it's worse. Doctor says, what do you mean it's worse? She said, now you can smell it. And he said, well, good. Now that we have your nose cleared up, we can work on your hearing. Okay. We don't.
She didn't like it either.
But we don't see things. Okay. We're dedicated not to see things the way they are. Our issues live in denial. Okay? I mean, it is not, if you really wanted to list your defects of character, if you're married, go to your spouse and go to your children. Go to your parents, go to your siblings. We don't like that list. We don't like that conversation. Okay? But because we have trouble realistically doing the kind of inventory work and taking a look at what we do. So we evolved as a couple. And as I'm trying to get, you know, as the program started to get me better, but in 7 years, we each of us had another surrender. And what happened, I think, during that surrender is I found out what God had to do with Wednesday. Okay. I could have passed the test. You could have given me any test, any question in AA, and I would have had an answer. But I didn't have an answer for why I was still a jerk. I didn't have an answer for why I was still angry. I didn't have an answer for why I was unhappy. When we surrendered, when she gave up trying to change me, I moved significantly closer to what she wanted me to be as a husband. Love started to enter our relationship in a more mature way than it had ever entered our relationship, and we became partners. And I think in the program, really from that point on, I think in my immaturity and in my not dealing with the defects of character in my life, my program was more external than it was internal. But once we had that second kind of surrender, I think both of us got on a spiritual path. And I got, this is not news to you, but when you're in a spiritual path, so when you have God in a marriage, it's a different paradigm than when God's not in the marriage. Okay. Chamberlain, only one problem, separation. Only one solution, connection. Okay. Have a self-centered life, suffer the consequences. Have a God-centered life, suffer the consequences. When you have a self-centered life and suffer the consequences, all you have is your ego and your intellect. That's like a 16-year-old running the show. It is not, you have information, you have data, but you have no wisdom, you have no depth, you have no spirituality. You've got an external, everything is circumstantial, it's external, and it's all about you. Because it's all there is. I mean, when it's ego and intellect, it's all there is. Those are the only tools you have. Okay. When you have a God-centered life, it's the same universe, but it's that new pair of glasses that Chamberlain talked about. Okay, when God is at the center of your life, when God's in your marriage, it is not as important, and you are not as important. So it gives a space of grace. It gives a space that doesn't exist in the other paradigm. And so when a problem comes up, you know, in my immaturity, it was all about me. You know, I mean, if the kids had a serious problem, you had to deal with how Bob was going to react. You almost couldn't deal with the children until you got Jerk taken care of. Okay. After that, it was different. I was not still pretty self-centered, pretty headstrong. I'm still type A, but I was not as important, and we were more of a team. I love my wife, and AA has allowed me to more fully love my wife over a period of time. I was so knee-jerk self-centered that I just always went to me first. And little by little, that's been reduced. It has not been eliminated, but it has been reduced so that I can be present to my children and to my wife. And I'll tell you, I mean, marriage is, you know, the biggest problems for most of us, relationship-wise, are the fundamental relationships. Children to parents, parents to children, and spouses to each other. Why? Because they're mostly unavoidable. I mean, with children, you can't discard the relationship. But mostly you can't. And if you discard it, you still have it. It just isn't healthy. Well, and if you're dedicated to staying in the marriage, you can't avoid it. So you've got a mirror. You've got someone who knows everything about you. And you've got to live with that person. Okay. That's an interesting spiritual construct. Okay, because it's when a vulnerability. And we are people who, when that would start to happen to us, we'd change people. Okay, we'd find someone else to put up with our crap. We just keep recycling through. When we get someone, you know, we'd take a hostage, we'd work that as hard and, you know, intensely as you can. But if you're going to begin a relationship, maintaining a lifetime relationship with anything, your church, your city, your program, your sponsor, your God, your people. I mean, you have to adjust. Are there three or four lifetimes of that? I think you're different when you're in your teens. I think you're different when you're in your 20s. I think you're different, you know, your view of life. You know, as you start to shed your false self, as you get in touch with your spiritual self. And when Merton talks about, you know, at age 40, I've been busy climbing the ladder of success only to find out the ladder's up against the wrong wall. When you really take a look and discuss and take a look at the second half of your life, and it becomes significantly different than what the first half of your life is about. So once we start to make this turn, now, could I have had a better place in Alcoholics Anonymous? I don't know. I don't think without question I'd be married today, even if I were... I think even if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, because I was so self-centered, if I had the same personality issue, I just would have been a sober jerk. Okay, well, I was a sober jerk, now that I think about it. But the program is just this wonderful design to bring you closer to the God of your understanding. It's a wonderful design to wake you up spiritually and to raise your level of consciousness. And where does that take you? I mean, ultimately, a spiritual process takes you towards love. I mean, if you want to measure, to take a look at your life and say, is it any better than it was before, measure it by love. Not by money, not by anything else. And I think that that's the thing that allows us to have the stuff that happens not matter very much. That we're more important to each other than it is. And we've had some fairly significant things. We have three children in recovery. You don't get those three kids now have 65 years of recovery between them. But you don't get there without going through some troubled times, you know, some tears and some not knowing what to do and kneeling at the side of the bed saying prayers together because we're just literally at the end of our rope and we don't know what to do. We've been through two, one time of going broke after being very, very well off. And then building it back up and having Jerk almost take it down again. It's kind of fun the second time. So now it isn't even it's not an issue about staying married. I mean, that's not a problem. We're in love with each other. It just is not, it's a non-issue. I don't think we would be able to be, Linda's a gentle soul. I would have killed her. I would have just ground her to death with the harshness. I'm one of seven kids. We were aggressive. And I'm self-centered, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm not intentionally trying to hurt Linda. I'm just trying to take care of me. But I'm not taking care of her. And in our family, you're supposed to take care of the women. I mean, you want a formula for staying married? Take care of her. End of story. It's all you got to do is just take care of your wife. And you want a formula for someone as being a great wife? Take care of your husband. And that's our job for each other, you know. And as you get weller, you will see different ways to do that. I mean, it's sexual, it's financial, it's physical, it's spiritual, it's nurturing. And I really think it's important to the two of us that we nurture each other. And why am I able to do that? I'm able to do that because I've changed. I'm able to do that because you've removed a lot of the things that were in the way. The spiritual process and the process of finding God is a process of removal, not addition. We don't need any more information. We need to shed the things that obstruct. And in that shedding, I can now, and that's, I mean, so we get on to Mexico in the winter. People who find out that I'm sober a long time wonder why I still go. I mean, that's always the question that normies ask you, you know. And, you know, just tired of being an asshole, just trying to maintain, you know. I mean, I don't know what you say, you know, to someone or explain to someone why you, but that's, ultimately, that's my quick answer. If I had one answer to do that, that would be my answer. And it is shocking how if I am not, but I think they're under the impression that once you have the information, why don't you just go out and do it? And because it's not enough for me. I have to maintain, I have to get my daily bread. I have to maintain enough spiritual momentum to keep the marble going around the bowl. If I don't maintain enough momentum, the marble always ends up in the bottom of the bowl. No one likes me when the marble's at the bottom of the bowl. I don't like me when the marble's at the bottom of the bowl. So everything, I mean, it just is, you know, I have a business partner that I've been partners with for 43 years. We are as different as night and day. He's just going to celebrate 50 years of sobriety in January. We've been partners for 43 or 4 years. How have I been able to maintain, and we've built a business together? And I've done it imperfectly, and at different periods of time I've done it poorly, but the reason I've been able to do that is what you've given me. You have allowed me to discard enough unworkability in my life to allow me to attend to life as it is. I still have areas of my life that I don't attend to as it is. I try to attend to it as I would have it, as Bob sees it. And I'm really glad you're a friend of Bob's rather than a friend of Bill's. I think it's a Bob. I've been trying to get this group to grow, but it's still a small group. But I appreciate that you are part of that group. Okay. So I think the difficulty of relationship is that it is a mirror. And it often is a mirror that you look at yourself naked in. When your children, I mean, when you're not showing up very well to your children and you're not showing up very well to your spouse, there's no place to hide. I mean, you can hide in anger and you can hide in denial and you can hide by running out of the house. But when you come back, it's there. There is no place to hide in the fundamental. You know, we were able to leave the house when we were kids. So maybe we hid a little bit from that from our parents. But ultimately, that's the grace. It's the joy. It is, I think I've had to attend and change things because of the marriage and being a parent. And I can't tell you both how appreciative I am that, you know, that she's, that Linda's been active in Al-Anon. But for both of us to have a program is important. I mean, to have a spouse that when you're standing on the dining room table urinating into the mashed potatoes and she's looking for her part, okay, that is an extraordinary moment. When and I am that kind of a guy that every once in a while there's no doubt whose fault. There's no doubt who's at fault. And I have someone who won't turn the laser on me.
So I'm crying and it's my turn. Oh, that and the other joke are my two least favorite things that he ever says. Ah. Bob talked about the fact that we have 3 kids in recovery. And I can't talk about it too much from the podium. I can't really talk about it too much, even not from the podium, because how could we be so lucky? Our oldest son is 44 years old. And day before yesterday, he had 26 years. And when he was in his use. We were so scared, and I don't know. I want to say I was more scared than Bob, but how do I know how scared he was? But I just was like, oh my God, no, this can't be happening. And we had, you know, some information and finally put him in evaluation. And then he was off, supposedly to be going off to University of Texas, which I heard was a drinking school, which I know they all are now. And I said, we'll just keep him home. We'll tell him he can't go. Bob said, no, we're going to tell him he can go. And I'm like, no, we can't. We'll just keep him here. And, you know, I always said if I could, I would have had cages in the basement and had them all three installed and then brought good food down, had good videos, and they would have, you know, fresh air. But they would be there, and they would be safe. And so anyway, that was Bill. And Bill had his last drink 2 days after getting out of evaluation, where he was told they would not tell him he was alcoholic, but he was definitely chemically abusive. And he went out and used two nights in a row, and the next day decided to go to an AA meeting. So somewhere in those 2 days, God changed his heart. I don't know what happened. We certainly didn't. I had done everything I could for years to try to make him okay. And then our second son, who's 2 years younger, he, of course, was using with Bill, but I didn't know that. I think he started at about age 12. And
this is Mr. and Mrs. AA, yeah, down in the basement smoking dope, you know.
Other friends over, you know, and Peter used to say to me, he would come home, Bob would be off speaking, and I'd say, come on in and watch a movie with me. And he said he would come in, and he and I would share a pizza, and I'd watch the movie with him, and we'd eat the pizza, and I'd go to bed just feeling so good about the fact that he was so safe. He had been smoking pot, would go in, throw up, go down in the basement, and I'm going to bed just so happy because I'm such a good mom who took such good care of him. And so anyway, Peter gets into a car accident, and he's in detox and arrested, long story. And
you're really a bad mom.
Yeah. We put him in treatment, and the whole time in treatment, I mean, the first 3 weeks we would drive out there on Sunday to visit him, and he basically wanted the things we brought him and would say goodbye to us. He had a bandana. He just was sort of, you know, not very pleasant. I'd cry all the way home. And about the fourth week we went to visit him, and we were visiting a different kid. Something happened. And so now he's on his journey. And last January he had 21 years. But we had another one. We had a little trailer, and he's 8 years younger than Peter, and all of a sudden, he started to show signs. And I was just shaking my...
21?
Peter, yeah. He came in maybe 22. I don't know. Came in 70. I don't know when he came in. We'll talk about it later. I don't do math well anyway, but from the podium, I do it even less. So anyway, we have this third one. And all of a sudden, we started to see and smell. And I was, no. I'm shaking my fist and I'm saying, no, God. No, 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 there is no way. It's not fair. 3 out of 3, come on. And that prayer didn't make any difference. And we had our third child, and he was, but I said, we will not have another Bazan's kid riding or driving a car, not out on the road with other people. So he's doing a drug run on his bicycle, and he gets hit by a van, and they left, and he was in the hospital in a coma for 4 days, and during that time they did a lot of blood testing and found a lot of chemicals in his system. And then we put him in treatment also, and he's been sober ever since. He just celebrated 15 years. And the thing about that is that Bob and I had nothing to do with that. We provided an example. We did the best we could. We sure prayed a lot. But those kids were touched by their own God, who took care of them, who blessed them, and allowed them to have our way of life and be sober and sane and really, really nice people. And I don't know why we were so lucky. And I remember saying, I don't know why we're so cursed. But it's not that. I don't know why we were so lucky. I don't know why. I think God gives everybody the gift. I just think our kids were, for some reason, able to open the gift. And so relationships are so vital, and how we live ourselves, how we live in our relationship with our God is so important. And the outcome isn't as important as how we handle ourselves in the process. Because it's where I grew up. I think I know who I am today. I like who I am today. And I remember the first time I did my fourth step, I was told I was supposed to give some of my attributes. And I went to Bob and said, do I have any? And he said, of course you do. And I said, could you give me a couple of examples? Because I don't know what they are. And that was my crisis at 7 years. I got lost in a disease that was in our home, and we did not have drinking in our home. And I went down just as far and just as hard because I got crazy. I was trying to manage things that I had no business trying to manage, and I was very, very ineffective. I'm going to spring something on you that you don't know is coming, but you know how you heard Bob? You know, sometimes he puts himself down, you know, Linda's the wonderful one and I'm the one that, you know, caused all the trouble. And I want to read something that he gave me. It says, it may not be appropriate, but I'm going to read it anyway. Dearest Linda, I love you. I love you more than I did when we dated, more than I did when we married, less than I will as we go along. 30 years together. We truly are not one, but and not two. We have grown together in some healthy sense, but without trapping one another. I truly think we celebrate each other. To explain how much you have meant to me is impossible. You help provide a foundation and a stability from which I operate. You manage things so well as to leave me the freedom to accomplish more than I ever could have dreamed of to do alone. You share my faith, my God, my recovery program, and my life. I bring you with me in all that I do. We are never alone. Your loving me has been one of the most important ingredients of my life. I have never doubted your love. You are a steadiness and a fidelity that is like warm water washing over me. You are beautiful, physically and spiritual. You are sexy, pretty, delightful. I enjoy being with you more than anyone else in the world. I never tire of you. It is difficult to communicate to another how much they mean to you. I know that I take you for granted in some ways, but I know that that is not the way it really is. You are loved and appreciated. You have made our home a wonderful place. You have born and mothered our children in a way I will always be grateful for. You bring so many things to the process that I don't, and you make me complete. I know that from time to time in this psychological and material world, you wonder if you should have worked outside the house and made money doing something else. The difference you made in the life of Peter, of me, of Peter, Bill, and Daniel is beyond measurement. This doesn't take into consideration all your mothers, all the love for your mother, all our Whitney people, your sponsees, my family, and countless other friends that value and treasure you. You are truly a gentle spirit. People bathe in that spirit and are refreshed. You cannot see how you affect others or how they swim in who you are. But I think if you look and see more people seeking you out, and as you turn and as you become more available, that increases. You are unique and a loving person. This is a special mark of your 50th birthday, and I find my reflections of you. Thank you for the quality of my life. Apart from my God and AA, I can't think of another factor that is so added to it. I know that sounds like it's about me, but I don't think it's about me. I think it's about love, and I think it's about saying to someone else how much you care. And I have all this stuff in this book, and when I left home, I thought, I've got to weed this out because it's, I hardly have room in my suitcase for my clothes when the book gets in there. And so I took out a whole bunch and I found that. And relationships are about getting out of the way and not just thinking of yourself. About thinking about yourself in conjunction with the other person, and sometimes about thinking about yourself less than the other person. But it's about compromise. And it's about selflessness. And I think any relationship that is grounded with a higher power has the power added. Because when it's just two people, we're treading water a lot of times. We're bouncing around. But when we have that rudder and that anchor, I think we can tackle anything. And we can tackle a whole lot more in a relationship than we can tackle alone. Because we each have our part. You know, there are things that I do in the relationship that really are somewhat unspoken. And there are things that he does that I just know I don't have to take care of. And we aren't one, but we aren't two. We're like 1 3/4. You know, I said the hardest thing about losing someone that you've had a long-time relationship, you lose half your data bank. Because how many times do you, you know, rely on someone else for even thoughts or memories? But I just feel so privileged to have had the relationship we have for the length of time we've had it. And if it weren't for my program of Al-Anon and his program of AA that we work independently, I don't think it would have been possible, but I don't think it would have been happy. Thanks.
Now it's your turn to cry.
No. One of the most shocking things when I was listening not too long ago to a new pair of glasses is Chamberlain describes as standing outside the club, the AA club, the night he got sober. Or he'd already been sober the night he went to AA. And the man comes out and said, "May I help you, sir? Are you looking for something?" is what he said to him. And he said, "If it would interest you, I'm looking for sobriety." And he said the man's face lit up like a Christmas tree. And he took him into the club. And then he says something, and I don't know if I'm quoting it exactly, but he said, "What I found was not just what I was looking for. I did not know how to live. And I was entered into a room. I did not know how to live." Most of us come into Alcoholics Anonymous in the construct and the paradigm of survival. We don't have anything extra. I mean, why are we self-centered? We're in survival. We're in six-foot waves. I'm hanging on to a damn oar is all I have. I don't have time to help you. I don't have time to think about you. It isn't that I wouldn't ordinarily, if the circumstances were different, think about you a little bit, but right now I'm up to my ass in alligators and I'm in survival. And when you're there, you can't serve other people. You can't take care of anybody else. And we talk a lot about in AA, about the transition from being a taker to a giver. And we talk about having a spiritual awakening. And we talk about the changes, which are almost... And that's what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous gave me to allow me to be able to stay in a marriage and to eventually to be in it in an effective way, to be a partner. Wouldn't have been able to any other way. That's not a small change. That's a big deal. And are we benefited? Of course, we're benefited. But that's what recovery at its fullness is. And that it does that in every arena. It offers that possibility in every arena of our lives. It offers it in our work life, and in our families, and in our communities, and in our groups. It is something that I didn't really know what the hell I was getting into. I came because I had a problem. My pants were on fire, and I was able to stay. I mean, the biggest thing is I was able to stay. I don't know why the gift of a young man coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, walking into a room with 40 to 60-year-old men, why I was allowed to stay. I worked with a boatload of young people in those days, and almost no one stayed during the first 10 years or so that I worked with young people. They didn't like it. They didn't identify. No, I was allowed to identify. I was allowed to like it from the moment I came in. It was hard for me to do the work, but there wasn't any difficulty in being attracted to you and what you were doing. It felt like I was home from the moment I walked in. And I know Mishun said she didn't feel that way, but she's not very deep. She has, I think, the... But it's so hard to, so I don't know. It just is, almost everything in my life, I was a great starter and a poor finisher. And so it was significant satisfaction that I still am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a significant satisfaction that I'm still in my marriage and it works. And that's, you know, not me. So, I think any of us who have been around a while know that the steps and traditions are principles, spiritual in nature, which practices a way of life, allow the user to be something and healthily whole. You know, it is, I mean, that's what that sentence, you know, kind of says it all. So it is to a couple of kids. Think of that, 21 and 23 years old. You know, newly sober, with a couple of kids then very shortly thereafter. You know, our kids just almost can't imagine having two children by the time we were 26. And we now have three?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, okay. All right.
We have for 33 years. It's a little slow.
So, all right. So that's about all I have to say about that. Kind of a Forrest Gump. That's all I have to say about that.
Thank you very much.